Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air. This week, Jerry and the gang are schooled in the Academy, and we listen to your voicemails.
All right, everybody, welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network. We are here to discuss Episode 6, The Academy. Let's just get started with, just go around the round table, introduce yourself, and give us your initial thoughts about this week's episode. Let's start with Jen.
Okay, I'm Jen. I'm Dan this week because he couldn't be here. So Dan, he's wearing his girly shirt again, like at Celebration.
It's all coming together now. Okay.
But this episode, I actually didn't think it was as bad as last week. Last week I had a lot more head scratching, a lot more flailing at the TV than I did this week. It still had its problems.
That's a good point. Feel free to tell us what you thought about last week's episode since you weren't on, because since it ties into this. Yeah, I'm very interested in hearing that, actually, since it was kind of a girly show.
It was kind of a quiet show. My thoughts kind of really paralleled what you guys were talking about last week, and I was kind of thinking the same lines about maybe Satine is doing this mastermind thing behind it. I really liked that you guys were talking about that. That last week's episode, there was a lot of logic error that we kind of had a running conversation about this previous episodes that I just kind of kept saying, why are you doing this? And it was making me crazy. So this episode didn't have quite as much of that. It had some, I had a few problems with how some of like the characters were convicted at the end because they never actually saw the person until they stormed into his house, but we'll probably talk about that later. I like that it tried to have a message. They were a little bit preachy with it, again, like last week, but kind of half and half on this one. I liked it in some ways. That there are problems that kind of made it not as exciting as some of the other episodes.
Hey, everybody. It's Barrett in L.A., taking Stuart's line from Now Playing podcast. He's always saying, Stuart in L.A. You know, this episode kind of reminded me of, you know how you go into McDonald's and you order some fries and they haven't changed the oil in the fries, so the fries don't come out especially fresh, but you kind of eat it anyway because you still like fries, you know, but it's kind of bad for you at the same time.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but man, am I hungry.
That's what this kind of episode reminded me of. It reminded me of some fries, you know, something that you really like that you're not going to dislike because you got a bad portion of it. I don't understand where we're going with these episodes. You know what? I do understand kind of how these episodes are a little slower. They have to fill out episodes. So are they're just giving us filler episodes. I try to find different things that are interesting about this episode that we'll go in and talk about, but it wasn't an exciting – there's nothing about this episode that felt like Star Wars. I mean, the Mandalorians already feel kind of not like Star Wars because they're kind of brand new to G-Canon, and they're not the Mandalorians that we thought we knew, so they don't even feel real Star Wars-y. And there's nothing in this episode that felt real Star Wars to me. Now, that was a bad episode. You know, the animation was good. The writing was good. It's just the story. There was nothing about it that screamed out Star Wars. And that's what I want, especially in an animated show.
You know, Barrett, you reminded me of something, a post that was put on our forums this week from Arnie that asked, is this Clone Wars series your Star Wars? And it was kind of open-ended for interpretation. Remind me to come back to that later, because what you just said kind of ties in that a little bit.
Well, I guess if we can pull the analogies in here, this is really sort of – it's the dinner after the really bad appetizer, or it's the rest of the day after you've been numbed at the dentist that morning. Last week's episode left such a bland, dull – kind of confusing logistically taste in my mouth that going into this episode, I kind of carried some baggage from that episode on into this one. I was hoping that this one would do something that would justify the existence of last week. I think I said over and over again last week that I couldn't see why last week's episode even needed to exist. And aside from a couple of premise points, I still don't see why last week's needed to exist. This episode in and of itself, I think, may have even been stronger if let stand on its own. It doesn't feel like Star Wars at all. Not really. But it is a solid little story, I guess. I think there are places they could have nipped and tucked this one and built in a little bit more of the introductory stuff from last episode, maybe into the beginning of this one, or maybe a little bit longer of a newsreel to mean that we wouldn't need last week's. And this one might have felt even more solid, because to have this as a two-part episode and to have sort of the shift in tone in some respects that we get between last week and this week, especially in regard to Satine's behavior, I don't know. I'm not sure that it works in that regard. I think as a separate episode of a cartoon, it was fine. As a Star Wars episode, not really all that great. And as a Star Wars two-parter, it didn't work. So I guess it just depends on what perspective we're looking at it from.
You know, I will agree with you, Nathan, that the episode didn't feel Star Wars-y. And it kind of, one thing you said triggered something for me. I didn't really piece it together until I heard you say your opening comments, that it felt like they had a story that was like 35 minutes long, where, well, we can't quite cram it into one show, and two episodes is a little long, but hey, what else can we do? We can't do an episode and a half. So that's kind of what I felt like. I didn't feel like there was a payoff. You know, I said last week that the episode was ridiculous, was my exact words. I said, well, maybe something will happen next week that will make it all click. And, of course, I said that I want to see Satine maybe be behind it. Not because I have anything against the character, but, hey, that's kind of a cool twist that we've not seen anything quite like that on Clone Wars. We didn't quite get that, although I'm holding out hope. You know, to see what happened with Almec was kind of like, well, okay, yeah, he seemed very disinterested and uncooperative last week, so that's not a shocker. I mean, you know, poor Satine, though. She's got people just all around her. You had somebody last season who betrayed her, somebody this season. It just, she just needs to quit. So maybe that's what we're going to see this season. It didn't do it for me. I'm with you guys. Not sure if this story is going anywhere else or is going to lead us into some other things for Satine and Mandalore, but it didn't cut it for me. It just, we can move on from here, in my opinion.
Yeah. Now, I wouldn't use the word ridiculous on this one. It had moments where the leaps of logic didn't seem to make sense, like why Ahsoka, in order to root out the corruption, needs to be put in a teaching position for a while, and that whole thing. There were a lot of leaps
of
logic that didn't seem to make sense. No, it's not as ridiculous as we're going to poison the culture through the Mountain Dew bottles and all this kind of stuff. It didn't feel as ridiculous. Nothing left me sitting there watching this episode wanting to smack my forehead going, what? It didn't leave me almost laughing out loud at the ridiculousness of aspects of it. It did leave me sitting back saying, this could have been done better. There were plenty of aspects where I was sitting there saying, like, for instance, they're in there in the warehouse district or whatever it is, and they're overlooking the communication. They're overlooking the meeting between the black marketeers and so forth, and as soon as they're overlooking and like, oh, something's going to fall. She's going to drop that computer. And sure enough, clatter, clatter, clatter. There you go. You know, it was done in a very predictable way in some respects. And in other respects, it wasn't predictable only because the leaps of logic they went through were so convoluted that it didn't really make sense. And it's hard to predict something without a logical sequence in place.
Nathan, I mostly agree with you that I don't consider the whole episode ridiculous, but the premise of Ahsoka going there to do what she did, it's just kind of what her mission was, did seem a little far-fetched. I mean, kind of carrying on what we said last week, it just seemed like she's not the right person to be sending just because of just how she might stand out. I mean, of just her species, her youth, her, you know, whatever, especially to go in and teach cadets. It seemed out of place. Now, I know she's a starring character of the show. We haven't seen her a lot this season. So it makes sense that you would use her just because of the popularity factor. But that's one thing where I did kind of slap my forehead thinking, why are you sending her? Why are you using her?
See, I'm fine with that because, like, I do have a leap of logic issue when it comes to sending Ahsoka in the first place, in the sense that it would have made more sense instead of contacting Padme, pretending it's a diplomatic mission, or at least telling the opening newsreel guy that it's a diplomatic mission, and then making it not a diplomatic mission once she's there, pulling her into it, showing her the corruption, sending her back to hopefully, as a senator, ask the somewhat independent Jedi to please, please, please send someone and all that kind of stuff. And then once she gets there, have her essentially be teaching the next generation not to be corrupt as opposed to actually hunting down corruption itself. That whole process, very convoluted, doesn't make a whole lot of logical sense, but she should have just been able to pick up a communicator and say, hey, Obi-Wan, I trust you. Send someone you trust to yourself because we got a problem here. But on the other hand, if you're going to send somebody in there, you either have two choices, someone who will blend in perfectly and be a spy, essentially, or someone who, by the very nature of how much they would stand out, is the last person you would necessarily expect. Putting her in there as essentially a teacher as opposed to an investigator, putting her in there as a Padawan, as a young female, somewhat inexperienced Jedi, throwing her into the situation, she's not the kind of person you would necessarily expect would need to be considered a threat if you're someone like Almec. So I can sort of understand the logic of putting her in there. On the other hand, the process of getting her there didn't seem to make all that much sense. But her herself, I don't entirely have a problem with it. In fact, I think that as a sign of faith in her abilities on Anakin's part, it's a big deal for her finally to be having a mission, which in this case wasn't exactly very well defined. I mean, it wasn't like she was told to go root out the corruption, but for the mission she's given, it's a step for her. I don't feel the ridiculousness in her appointment so much as the process to get there. Couldn't she have just picked up a communicator and said, hey, send help, please. I love you, love you, love you, please send help, you know, something.
So did they use Ahsoka as bait? Did the Jedi use Ahsoka as bait? Because Satine definitely used Ahsoka as bait. She wanted a Jedi there to use as bait to root out the corruption. And the Jedis went along with it without Ahsoka knowing. I thought that was very interesting. And, you know, we got some good moments. You know, wasn't it good to see Ahsoka and Anakin back together again? Because they have that, you know, I used to think it was a brother and sister type of interaction with each other. But you know what it's more like? It's more like the average family dimension, like a father and daughter. Because what you have in society now, you're having a bunch of people who are having kids a lot younger. And, you know, I'm not that old. I think I'm pretty cool. Your kids never think you're cool. But my kid is allowed to, when I'm teaching them things, you know, my kid's allowed a little bit more sass than, say, my parents were allowed a little bit more sass. And I'm sure, you know, my mom was allowed a little bit more sass than her mom. And that's the kind of dynamic they have. You know, he's still teaching her, but it's more of kind of like, I'm going to be your friend also type of teaching, which I think is very, very common the way American families are now and the way it's going. So I thought it was I like seeing the interaction between them two. And I noticed that when Anakin introduced Ahsoka, that they tried to do it a little bit more formally than when they did when they first met Barriss and Luminara. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, they're really trying to do the role, but it doesn't last. You know what I mean? It was good to see Anakin and Ahsoka. I did notice a couple things that, if we want to go into Ahsoka, talk about Ahsoka, that her teaching style is a little bit more different than Anakin. I mentioned last podcast how she's doing the Jedi mind trick and how in this episode she's kicking butt without a lightsaber and where is she learning these traits. When she is teaching the cadets in Mandalore and she's teaching them the definition of corruption and what is corruption, it was more of like a Plo Koon Yoda type of teaching, you know, because Anakin may be the chosen one, but he's not particularly too bright, and he's not teaching like that. So I thought it was kind of a different dynamic on Ahsoka.
I really like that, too. I like that she's coming into her own. She's not just a clone, forgive the pun, of Anakin. She's not going to be becoming just like him. They've been kind of, I was afraid she was going to be like a little Anakin 2.0. She had all this sass, as Burnett was saying. She's kind of snippy, kind of obnoxious. And she sounded very much like Anakin did in Attack of the Clones, this back-talking, almost a little bit whiny person. And so having another one was really not appealing to me at the beginning when she was first introduced. And I love kind of seeing her growth. I have no idea when this episode takes place in terms of continuity of the series, but I like that we're seeing her kind of getting her own ideas, her own thoughts, her own opinions, and getting to teach them here. It makes them more apparent of how she's feeling and how she's thinking about stuff. So I actually really like it. And I like that it does echo, though, Anakin's thoughts, because Anakin and Padme have talked about corruption and how to root out problems in politics. And so some of Ahsoka's ideas mirror that, but they're not identical, which is really neat.
Yeah, I don't know if we would call her, to go back to what Barrett started with about considering her sort of bait thrown in there. I'm not sure we would call her bait. With regard, though, to the character development, I think we're seeing character development on Ahsoka in a couple of ways here, both from a visual standpoint and from the standpoint of the characterization, because visually, they used to not do a whole lot with her facial animations. She would have the brow movements a little bit, but I noticed she was really, really over-exaggerated in this episode. Her body movements, her poses, so to speak, the way she would stand, it was very overblown. The way that she was obviously fighting hand-to-hand and the movements used there, similar to stuff we've seen before, but certainly a little bit more exaggerated in terms of the just the speed of the fight and that sort of thing. But then even in just her facial expressions, I actually found myself thinking back to what I originally thought about Ahsoka ages ago when the series first started, was you got this little stick-thin character with this ginormous melon of a head. And it seems like in this episode, the head was even bigger, not necessarily because it really was, but because the facial expressions were much more pronounced, the brow ridge movements were much more pronounced, as opposed to the body movements. And her body movements, just from the standpoint of the way she's animated, not necessarily how exaggerated they are, but just the body proportions and the look, doesn't seem like it's gone through the type of upgrade that her facial animations have. Like, almost like they've taken the character model from before, removed the original head, and added a new head or tweaked the head to give her more expression without the body necessarily going along with it. From a characterization standpoint, yeah, she finally gets to come into her own. She finally gets a mission of her own. What I found interesting was here she is giving this very sort of pat lesson on corruption, but she sounds very much like what Anakin has talked about before, and yet in a sense you could see them as two sides of one coin in that, yes, they're both talking about rooting out corruption, but in Anakin's sense, rooting out corruption could mean literally just tearing through the political structure, removing people if possible, heck, once he's Vader, assassinating people if possible, whereas I don't see Ahsoka ever going that direction. Ahsoka seems more on the altruistic side of almost a more patriotic bent, as opposed to Anakin, which is more of a loyalty to the Chancellor and sort of this, I guess with Anakin, it's not even really idealism. With Anakin, it's more of a dichotomy. It's more of a black and a white, good and evil. This will be done. This will not be. So he would root out the corruption just from that sort of a moral absolutism sense, whereas Ahsoka seems much more like the type of character who would carry on these lessons, try to teach them to future generations as she is here, and be one of those characters who works sort of within the system to try to fix things. It's funny. She almost feels like a Rebel Alliance version of a Jedi, as opposed to what the Jedi have essentially become in the Clone Wars as represented by Anakin and others in relation to the political structure. It's interesting to see, and hopefully we'll see more of how those two idealisms that are similar yet on sort of different paths wind up playing off each other as the series goes along.
Now, let me ask you this. Let me ask you a question about, just to go back to having her as bait. We all know that Anakin has no problem using people as bait. In episode 2, he uses Padme as bait to try to catch the bounty hunter that's trying to kill her. Why keep Ahsoka in the dark in this? Why not just tell her? Have they not been through enough to where he can trust his Padawan to go there? She knows she's on a mission to go there to do something. Why keep her in the dark?
See, I couldn't tell, though, if Anakin even knew the truth behind it. It certainly sounded like with Satine, she's like, well, I didn't know who I could trust, so I looked to the outside. It's like she's having to explain it to everyone involved, including Ahsoka, as if she's going to have to go back and explain it otherwise. I'm not sure that Anakin would have been privy to the actual mission. It was more like Mandalore sort of requests a Jedi for assistance, but when she gets there, she goes straight in. I mean, she's undercover in a sense, but I never really got the sense of whether or not anyone involved other than Satine knew what Ahsoka's point was in being undercover.
Yeah, I definitely got the sense that Satine had brought her in hoping that she would be a catalyst to bring out whatever corruption she was suspecting. But I really didn't get the feeling that Anakin or Ahsoka had any clue going in.
Great discussion on that, guys. Let's move on a little bit then to our new characters in this episode, our cadets. What did you guys think about them?
Quirky. I had to rewind. I had to rewind to see if that was legit. And then the funny thing was, is I happened to be looking at Twitter around the same time, and Ginger Prince had tweeted, "That's a name for a cat." My best friend growing up, her cat's name was Quirky. So that's all I could think of.
Wow.
It was terrible. I felt really bad, but I could not take him seriously because of that.
Well, all their names are the plays. We've got, was it Sonny? S-O-N-I-E-E? Yeah, whatever. Sonny. Okay. It's another one of those, let's take an Earth name, spell it differently, and all of a sudden it's science fiction. We have Quirky, K-O-R-K-I-E, whatever, C-O-R-K-Y. Lagos, very, very almost ancient Greek sounding. And I guess it's Amis, A-M-I-S, but I couldn't help but, as soon as I saw the name there, realizing that maybe he should have been part of the plot because something would have been amiss. It would have been a nice pun for them to add in there. What got me about these characters, aside from the fact that really it was hard to tell their personalities apart in many ways, it seemed like, in contrast to Ahsoka, virtually every other character in this episode, their animations were, especially facial animations, were incredibly, incredibly bland. Basically, these kids got mouth animations and almost nothing else. Satine's got the mouth animations. I had thought in the preview that I had seen her cheekbones moving, which was something that seemed like it was added more for Padme in the previous episodes, but it doesn't seem like it really in the episode. Then again, she's so bland in this episode, goodness knows whether she ever had an expression to give. And, you know, Almec and everyone else. It's like Ahsoka gets these extreme, exaggerated characterizations in the way that she portrays her facial expressions and everything else, but we don't really get that with any of these other kids. It was hard for me to be, you know, to like these kids when we know relatively little about them. And they're altruistic, sure, but they just don't express much. It seemed like, whereas these are supposed to be kids, I felt more like these are the ones who should be standing guard at Buckingham Palace. You know, they really seem stoic for children.
They all seem to have that Pixar movie human look to them.
You know, I like the kids. I like the way they portrayed, because the first time that they venture out to try to find the corruption is they're hungry. You know, they're like, well, I guess we're not getting any midnight snacks. We might as well solve this mystery. And it's funny, but, you know, when kids are hungry, they're restless and they get out and do things, you know, and I thought that was, oh, you know, it was pretty good. You know, so that wasn't heroic. It was more of, you know, it was more of they were bored, what kids would do when they go out and they sneak out. I also like the fact that when they go down into the docks, is it supposed to be the docks again that they're going to, or is it like a warehouse district? I thought it was the docks, because I remember thinking, you know, they never have any, all the security that this guy's supposed to be watching these docks, and that's where everything's going down at the docks. But when they see the hooded man in mystery making the deals with those troopers, those unmarked police officers, what is the first thing that one of the cadets do? She takes out her cell phone and starts taping. And I'm like, that's exactly what my 12-year-old niece would do if she saw something going down. You know, she'd take out the cell phone and record. And I remember thinking, you know, why don't most – you would think that most things would be recorded in the Star Wars universe when something starts going down. When Satine and Padme are on the dock trying to find out who's poisoning the tea, you know, I'm surprised they don't take out a recorder. You know, they're supposed to have evidence. And these kids think of that. And I thought that was – you know, I thought it was pretty good.
I actually like the kids to a degree, because they kind of don't succeed, or they don't succeed without a lot of help. I was kind of afraid it would be kind of a Scooby-Doo type thing where it's like, you know, the damn meddling kids, and they would have just kind of right off the bat gone and done everything right, and the adults weren't going to listen, and, you know, stupid grown-ups, they don't know anything, and we got to do this because we're, you know, the young new people. And they kind of do a really poor job. Like, they're very naive. They take the prime minister completely serious when he's like, okay, he says flat out, bring the recording and everybody who saw this and come to this, like, really out of the way area. And they're like, okay. And you can just see how completely naive they are. And they just don't have any idea. And it's kind of neat to see them learning by utterly failing. And I appreciated that. I appreciated that they didn't just go in and they knew everything. Cause that's another one of my grievances with Ahsoka at the beginning is, you know, if only you'd listen to me, and she's showing up, Jedi who are way more experienced than her. I like that they don't know everything. I appreciated that.
Yeah, not a Wesley Crusher in the bunch.
Now, kids.
They were all Wesley Crusher.
Now, kids, make sure you load up the mystery machine with everybody you've got. Bring Scrappy Doo, too.
Well, you got to figure, though, the way that it winds up working out, though, I mean, they wouldn't even run into trouble, and Ahsoka wouldn't have had to necessarily come in and help them had they just shown her the recording in the first place, because they have this whole conversation of, well, we spied something at the docks, you know, because they all get that weird, like, all kids must sound like they're always really, really excited kind of voice thing going on. We saw someone at the docks, and we're supposed to meet with them, and we're going to tell blah, 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 right? You know, we told Satine and all this stuff, and never once in that conversation did they say, and by the way, here's a recording. You think you got something that could maybe look underneath this person's hood and tell us who it is before we walk into the trap or anything like that? It's like they hold the recording until after they almost get themselves captured and or killed before they're like, oh, yeah, here's a recording right here. And speaking of the recording, I mean, I don't think I'm saying anything that thousands of Star Wars fans haven't said since this episode aired, but if you can take a guy who's totally covered in a hood, who doesn't have any part of his face sticking out whatsoever, and though he's granted it's kind of a dead giveaway whenever you see his hands that it's not Satine, but you have someone completely enshrouded in blackness, and somehow through a hologram, Ahsoka can scan it and I guess get the shadows and such and figure out that this is Almec. Why has no one ever tried this with any holographic recordings ever, unless there just never have been any that have gotten out, any holographic recordings whatsoever of Darth Sidious? You know, don't you think that maybe the Trade Federation at some point would have been, gee, we wonder who we are working for. Maybe we can use this against him in the future. And do a quick scan and go, oh, it is Chancellor Palpatine or something. You know, this is the ultimate Sith revealing technology right here. And Ahsoka just carries it around like it's nothing. And if it doesn't ever show up again, then that's going to be both a missed opportunity and make this seem like a really big convenience that such a thing could possibly exist here. Do a voice analyzing thing or something to figure out that it's Almec. Don't use the magical scan under the hood device if you're not going to somehow use it later, because it really begs questions about the Sith.
You know, and I'll go a little bit further with that. Why even have Almec hooded in the first place? He was doing a meeting, a secret meeting. He had no idea that he was going to be watched. Why was he in a hood? You know, obviously his secret police know who they're working for. You know, why was he in a hood at all? So it was that was kind of ridiculous, that kind of whole scene right there. But it had to make the plot point of, you know, the kids are quote unquote smart, and they're, you know, these are the leaders of Mandalore, and, you know, they're able to bumble their way through a mystery. But it just,
no wonder,
you know,
Death Watch took back over, huh?
Right. And how much cooler would it have been if Merrick was in a Death Watch armor or some sort of different type of armor that had to do with Death Watch? You know what I mean? But some sort of armor, some sort of ceremonial armor from back in the day of Death Watch, you know, or something like that. It would have been a lot cooler, I think.
Speaking of Death Watch, that does bring up another point, and that is sort of the whole impetus for why Ahsoka can't go charging in with her lightsaber. Why Ahsoka gets that awesome hand-to-hand fighting scene, and why she doesn't have a lightsaber at the end is, of course, because when she gets to the planet, she's not allowed to carry a lightsaber. Off-worlds can't carry lightsabers. Why? Because according to them, Almec and Satine, Obi-Wan caused trouble the last time he was there. Now, I seem to recall it wasn't Obi-Wan that was causing the trouble. It was Death Watch, terrorist attacks. How would Satine have allowed that kind of measure to go forward of not allowing Jedi to have their weapons when it was Obi-Wan who saved their butts from a Death Watch takeover, which is supposed to be the impetus for why we can't have them. His actions in saving them made lightsabers a threat to them. Somehow that doesn't make sense. That's another of these, how in the world does a culture like this function given the way it makes its decisions, given the way it destroys evidence, because now we know that Satine apparently wasn't in on it. She just wanted the evidence burned down out of disgust. Way to go. Nice to know the system's going to work. It makes me sit back and just, you know, I when I first saw the fortune cookie of this episode, those who enforce the law must obey the law, I laughed out loud from just the fact that I follow politics. And I can't remember the last time we had an administration who totally towed that line. It was probably, you know, founding era, though probably not even then. I mean, I don't know that anything like that exists in full practice. But I'm sitting there saying, it's not even a matter of who enforces a law should obey the law. Why not just have the fortune cookie say, if you're going to make laws, make them make frickin' sense, and use Mandalore as your example of what not to do.
Speaking of politics, can we tell that the you know, Mr. Lucas does not like the government at all? I mean, is that no secret? Because this Ahsoka's on corruption was just brutal. I mean, brutal.
I like how she said, they say, so it's about greed? Well, no, but the temptation, and what was the whole thing last time? This is all because of your greed, 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 greed. It's like right. We saw greed coming up as much as customs official and corruption last time. But now, no, it's not about greed. I guess Ahsoka takes a more nuanced look at things for a 14-year-old.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things that kind of bothers me about this episode is that I wanted, based on my comments last week, so much to think, hey, they're going to do something really cool this show. I bet Satine's involved in something. And this episode doesn't really lead you that way. It's like, oh, dear God, she was just incompetent then in the last week's episode of wanting to burn down this and burn down that. So I was almost like, oh, great. So there's absolutely no payoff for me on this one.
Let me ask this question, and because I think that especially I want to hear Jen's comments on this because she didn't talk about the episode with us last week. It seemed to me like Satine is still acting kind of strange. If she's being sincere in her scenes with the kids when they come to report the corruption and everything, if she's being sincere, she is the most insincere, sincere character on this show outside of perhaps Sidious. I mean, Sidious, she could give Sidious a run for his money in appearing to be one thing while truly being another, because she did not seem really concerned or sincere about her understanding of the situation and that it really is a threat at all. Jen especially, how does this jive with last week?
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because when Jerry was just saying we know now that she's not in on it, I'm not 100% sold on that. Like, I really thought she was acting weird last week, and I totally agree with you guys when you were talking about it in last week's roundtable. And this week, while she's not quite getting, I guess not caught, but she doesn't seem quite as suspicious, she was still acting very odd. Like, I was very confused and a little bit thrown by that episode, by the scene, when the kids go in and talk to her, and she's like, I'll take care of it, it's fine, you just run along and play, you know, when you're older, you can handle it. And that just seemed very weird compared to what she was doing. Like, last week, she was like all gung-ho out there with Padme, and they're political figures. They're not the type of people either to be going and charging out and doing that stuff. So I'm not 100% sold that she's not involved in something bigger. My husband was saying that he wonders if she was trying to take out a political and financial, I guess, rival in the prime minister. So I thought that was an interesting idea.
Oh, that, and by the way, Jen, you're right. I'm not letting her off the hook overall, but this episode leads you to believe that she's not involved and is like, oh, shoot, we just don't get the payoff from last week here. I'm with you. I'm still holding out hope that, I mean, hey, maybe Almec and Satine are in on it together and she just got to the point where she just had to give them up. I don't know. If something cool like that happens, I will be thrilled to see the show go somewhere like that. I was just disappointed that they didn't go with it here. Maybe they're just biding their time.
You know, Jen, you bring up the scene about when the cadets go in and they try to tell her and they said, you know, we have this recording, it's them, we have proof. And she really doesn't do anything about it. And I should have gotten the same feeling that I did last episode where when she was talking about Death Watch and stuff, where it should have gave me that twinge, like she knows a little more something than she should. I didn't get that from that scene. I thought she was just being either A, very incompetent, like someone else brought up, or she was drinking the tea because she was very disconnected from everything. Last episode, she was out there on the docks. You know, she was in the actual practical application on the ground of the investigation. Here, when she gets a clue of where the corruption's at, she doesn't make a move. It was almost like she was so pacified here. She was a background character that you would think that she would have gotten with Ahsoka, with the Jedi that was there, and done something about it. And I can only think that – I don't want to think that she's incompetent, a leader. I want to think that she didn't know who she could trust. And maybe she felt like she could do anything about it, and that she had to wait till things played out before that she could make her move, because it just doesn't make any sense. There was no hints other than, like you said, Jen, other than that, which you could say that was a hint that she's still on it. Other than that, there was nothing else in this episode like there was in last episode. But we did have something from Almec when Ahsoka and Anakin are on the dock, and Ahsoka and Anakin introduce themselves to Almec, and Anakin says, "I'm not going to be staying. You know, my Padawan is." And then Almec says, "You're not going to be staying?" And I said, he just said that. You know, and only people that are in on it are going to, you know, say something like that. You know, like, you know, why are you repeating that? You know, you must have done that for a reason. You know, Filoni, they must have done that for a reason. And that was telling us that he was in on it. You know, I'm Monday night quarterbacking after you see it and see it again. But there was the hints there for Almec. Here in this episode, there was nothing for Satine, so I think it was a total misdirect from last episode. It was a total misdirect. We were supposed to think Satine was on it, so we wouldn't suspect Almec, and I think they got me.
Unless they replaced her with a handmaiden, perhaps Satine, or however you pronounce it with the little accented E on the end there, she really did seem very disconnected. I think what gets me is I think we're meant to take her lack of response to the kids as trying to protect them. And we're supposed to accept her explanation at the end that she just didn't know who she can trust to be part of why she's so subdued. But it doesn't fit with the last episode. I mean, I guess that's the explanation we're supposed to be understanding, we're supposed to be believing, but it's hard to believe, not even just in the context of this episode, but in the context of the broader two. Although it does take some things out of the previous episode and give us more of an explanation. For example, we talked last time about how that customs official, who again, in any directories of characters, it'll simply say official, comma, custom. I think that's probably his proper name. Mr. Official, remember he said, you know, that like, oh, convenient that the guards are all the way. He says, oh, it's no convenience, or it's no coincidence, it's no luck involved, or whatever it is that he says. Now we know that if there was someone who purposely called him away, it was Almec. You know, we have a little bit more context to some of the things from the last episode. It doesn't excuse all the ridiculousness, but at least there is a connection there. Plus, also, we have this sense now that, you know, we're talking about the tea last time. Why tea? Of all things, why tea? Well, in this episode, we're given the fact that it's a food shortage issue with those particular schools, the rations at that particular school, which again follows the same idea of it being food shipments of some kind being what's at the heart of what's being directed here by the black market. So I think this episode does shed a little bit of light looking backwards, but from Satine's standpoint, it really doesn't. It's like it drops her as a character in most respects, except when they uplift her and apparently think that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm totally wrong here. Maybe Satine's got some type of Jedi powers I don't know about. But if not, then they must think she's like Magneto or something. Because when they need to lock Satine up, they don't just lock her up. They got regular prisons to lock everybody in like the cadets. They don't just lock her up in a regular prison. They put her in like the weird tower prison thing where you stick her in the box and it goes up and then up and then up, as if somehow it's going to make it harder for her to escape out of it if she's got to escape and then go down as opposed to just escaping. It's this most bizarre prison. The only thing I could liken it to is in the X-Men movies when they have to stick Magneto in the plastic prison, just about. What about Satine, especially given this episode where she really wasn't a threat to the conspiracy at all, what about Satine would have required her to be put in the bizarre three-year-old's building block toy prison?
They were more worried about somebody rescuing her, you know, and it's kind of harder to rescue somebody if they're on a platform. But not really with these police officers who could be beat down by these cadets who have their hands tied behind their backs. So maybe that's why they put her way up there, because they knew that the police officers weren't going to be able to have any type of security for her. What'd you guys think about that last fight at the end? Because I enjoy seeing Ahsoka kick butt, and it's not even really a surprise anymore, because we've seen her kick butt so much that when she was kicking butt, I was like, yeah, Ahsoka. But it wasn't like when, you know, she's cutting up droids and we're seeing it for the first time. It's almost like I'm expecting her to do these amazing things now, to use her force powers to throw these police officers around the room and be able to beat down six enemies without a lightsaber. It's like, you know, when I see Anakin in a fight against Cad Bane, you know, I expect him, you know, to fight. And I'm kind of getting that from Ahsoka now. And to Ahsoka's credit.
You know, I will say this. It's a little weird to see Ahsoka so effective in a fight when she doesn't have a lightsaber and is not using force powers. She just gets in there and, like, ninja Jackie Chan attacks these Mandalorian guards or police officers or whatever. And that's a little weird. I don't see her being that effective against trained soldiers, however they're trained. I mean, if she dropped in there, did some force pushing, maybe did a little hand-to-hand combat, that would work for me. But this is just too – she was just too ninja-like in her moves. And I don't know. That was a little jarring for me.
I just took it that the Mandalorian police squad or whatever had really crummy training. Pacifist maybe just yes. Couldn't hire someone to really give him a good job.
Like the fact that, you know, she doesn't really care while Satine's being zapped, you know, with the little shock collar and everything. But boy, they start to put it on a kid. Man, you can't let that happen. That's when you spring into action. Let the leader get fried a little bit. You know, she deserves it for sticking you out there as bait, I guess. But not the kids, whatever you do. But I did like the fact that at the end, when Almec gets it on his neck, gets the shock collar put on his neck. I mean, first of all, he orders his troops down, which you kind of expect from sort of a cartoony type of villain. But it strikes me that she has that sort of, not really glee, but she certainly has more of a, yeah, zapping him kind of thing than you would think a pacifistic Jedi would have. It seems like there's a little bit of an Anakin sort of rubbing off on her in that sense. And I thought that was kind of nice, because we've had all these instances here in the last two seasons of Anakin getting those moments where he gets to save the day, but do so in a way that sort of leans toward the darker side, leans toward what's going to eventually lead him to becoming Vader. And here's sort of Ahsoka having a little bit of that same edge to her. It disappears really quickly, kind of a blink and you'll miss it kind of thing. But it is there when she does put the shock collar around Almec's neck. I thought that was a nice touch that they added there. Or maybe she just, like, she puts the shock collar on him, he finally orders his guards to stand down, and as she's walking away, she accidentally goes bzzz one more time. Right. You know, something like that. Although I do think it's interesting. Yeah, exactly. She, because it would fit the personality, certainly, but I did find it interesting that they talk about, even in the episode guide on StarWars.com, about how one way that we know this takes place after Sphere of Influence is that Ahsoka is much more confident in her mind trick ability. But it didn't work. Her mind trick ability was BS. She supposedly mind tricked the guards, and when they get in there, Almec's like, haha, see, now you've revealed yourself. My guards are trained to withstand your mind trick. Ha 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 ha. You know, kind of the stereotypical villain kind of thing going on there. And, you know, it's interesting because here she is, she's growing in confidence. But it's not to say that her abilities are always going to work. It seemed like in this episode she was amazingly effective most of the time, except right then. And in all the combat, that one failing sort of falls by the wayside when we go back and look at her portrayal here. But she did try a mind trick confidently that completely didn't work.
I wonder if we're supposed to get out of that the confidence is what kept her from being able to do it as well as she should have. Were they really that well trained, or did she just like, oh, I got this? Because you'd also think that if someone was faking the effects of a mind trick, that a Jedi would be able to sense that, unless they were just like, oh yeah, simple. I do this all the time.
I think it was, you know, it's kind of hard. I think it's you can take it either way. If it was that these guys are well trained, they're well trained enough to thwart a Jedi mind trick, but they cannot take four preteens to the ground with shields and batons. And they, you know, so it's kind of like they're trained to for mental, you know, things against Jedi, but they can't take these little cadets. And she should have been able to sense. And I think you're right, Jay. I think that is the cockiness that Anakin is training her, because she should be able to sense when something doesn't work. But I like that. I like that because she's not a full-grown Jedi. She's going to make mistakes, you know. So one of these times, she's going to make a mistake, and that's why she don't make it to Order 66. Watch. No.
Oh, well, you get off it. She's not going to die at the end of the season. Okay, Nathan, can you take us down Continuity Corner a little bit and see if there's anything here?
Well, it's really not a whole lot this episode. The episode guide on StarWars.com goes through the process of telling us that this must be after Sphere of Influence because of Ahsoka being better or at least being more confident with her mind trick, as I mentioned. But we already knew that episode had to be before Senate Murders because Anaconda Farr was in it, so that really doesn't tell us much of anything. We also know that these episodes, last week's and this week, must take place after the previous Mandalorian episodes, which again puts them far enough ahead that we don't need to worry about Senate Murders. My guess, honestly, is that this episode is probably actually within the time frame of what we would think of as Season 3, actually taking place after the end of the Season 2 episodes that we have already seen. What I have to wonder is when Anakin and Rex take off in this episode to join Kit Fisto somewhere for the duration of this episode, if that is an episode we are eventually going to see. If perhaps that's a storyline that we're going to wind up seeing later on in the season, perhaps even in future seasons as a flashback episode to what they were doing while Ahsoka was on Mandalore. But there's no indication of that yet. The other thing I did want to mention, last time I mentioned how the unnamed smuggler, the Mugen smuggler leader, was being said by some on Wikipedia and elsewhere to be Teeva, the character from the Clone Wars Adventures MMO, or MMORPG, as I often call it. Basically a collection of minigames at this point. Turns out that Leland Chi later went in and confirmed, after an email from me and then posting on the message boards, that yes, that character is Teeva, who was introduced, because he was going to be introduced in the series, introduced in the Clone Wars Adventures video game. Continuity corner-wise, though, there is virtually nothing here. I would like to say that we'll see some of the characters later. I would say that the only thing that gives us much more indication about when this episode would take place is simply, as Dave Filoni has said frequently, keep an eye on the advancement of Ahsoka. As she gets better, presumably that's progressing throughout the storylines. But beyond that, we really don't have much to go on here.
So let me get this straight. A character who was selling tea was named Teeva.
Yes, that is true. That is very true.
Well, I'm glad he wasn't actually selling Gatorade.
Or Mountain Dew or anything else.
Yeah, I'm Duva.
T-Dew or something like that. or first name Dutha, last name Dew.
Dutha Dew. That's like the make seven up yours, yeah.
Exactly. I love that.
That was
you
good.
Just started a YouTube hunt for me, my friend.
Okay. Back to a topic we had mentioned earlier. If you've been on the Republic Forces Radio Network, Star Wars Action News, I think it was for sure I saw it on the forums, but I believe it was posted on Facebook and maybe even Twitter as well. Arnie had put out a simple question. Is the Clone Wars your Star Wars? And interpret that however you like. Take that for what it is. But I'm interested in your guys' comments. What do you think to that? How if you responded to that, how'd you respond? And if not, how would you? Jen.
Oh, man, you put me on the spot. I haven't even responded to that thread yet because I haven't gotten my thoughts ordered. But actually, I have been thinking about that thread. I saw it and I haven't responded yet because I haven't really decided whether or not Clone Wars is my Star Wars. I don't know if I have my Star Wars. It's all kind of Star Wars to me. There are things I like about Star Wars. There are things that I don't like in the show, in the movies, in the EU, and in this series. And there are things I really love. And to me, it's all Star Wars. I'm happy to see it still being promoted. I'm happy to still see new material being injected into the universe. I don't like it when things that I really enjoy just kind of go away. And sometimes it's nice to have things like that can be treasured. But in this case, I don't think the new material is necessarily all bad. There's a lot of negativity on the Clone Wars, and I don't think all of it is deserved. Some of it does have its problems. There are problems with a lot of the logic in some of these series, or in some of these episodes, and there are bits where it does trample on the EU. But for the most part, I don't think it's been as bad as people seem to think, and there have been a lot of enjoyable episodes out of it. So I'm kind of 50-50 on the Clone Wars, but I like it a lot more than Episode 2. Like, I can't stand Attack of the Clones, except for that last 20 minutes or so when the clones show up, so I think it probably would be sort of my Star Wars to a degree. So it's all Star Wars, and I like it all.
Okay. Barrett?
Are you asking me if the fries that I ate that were overcooked made me full? Yes. Did they give me nourishment? Yes.
Did I? Well, no. French fries probably didn't give you nourishment.
They gave me something.
Yeah.
Do I like it as much as when I went and got my first bag of fries from McDonald's as a kid, where they were nice and salty and they were golden, and you take that first taste and there's nothing like that bag of fries? It's my Star Wars. Do I like everything that's out there? No. But I don't like it when they, you know, kill off a character in some of my favorite TV shows. I don't like it when I have to come in early at 5 o'clock in the morning. But it's something that you do. I mean, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Star Wars. And I know I get a lot of flack for this. And I always say, if you're a fan, then all Star Wars is good Star Wars because it expands our universe. But I can totally see the validity of other people's arguments of saying that, you know, this is our Star Wars from our childhood, and, you know, this is what we beloved, and how can they change it so drastically? And I think that most people, it's hard to make everybody happy. And I think that they're doing their job by evidence that we're discussing this, that other people are discussing this on the forums, they discuss it. I think they're doing their job when they bring new Star Wars in. They're giving us what we want. You know, it may not be how we would do it, but they're giving us what we want. And so, yes, as it pains me to say, Sky Guy and Snips are my Star Wars. You know, they're the poor, you know, it's the watered down version, but yeah, it's still my Star Wars, and I love it. You know, I'm still waiting. It gets me to what else are they going to do? You know, what else are they going to do? Because as of right now, all the gloves are off. They can do whatever they want, and they do whatever they want. So for me, it came to a point where I had to accept what was going on and move along with it and go along for the ride, or you don't accept it and, you know, you go watch He-Man. But I don't see that happening.
All right. Well, on this 13th anniversary of the Star Wars Timeline Project,
yay!
I'm going to manage, I think, to shock and dismay and probably tick off some of my longtime Timeline readers and paraphrase Billy Joel, which is to say, everybody's talking down the new show, funny, but it's still Star Wars to me. As far as I know, this is Vision. I mean, this is Star Wars in tone. And as much as I was anti-Clone Wars to begin with, anti-cartoon series, I saw Ahsoka's existence as this nuke into continuity, which it is, and what's happening with the Mandalorians and everything else is amazingly frustrating. As time has gone on, I've started to find that the Clone Wars grows on me, especially as I watch it in high definition, especially on Blu-ray, where it's sort of the visual style has now grown on me, and the storytelling style feels like Star Wars. It's telling the Clone Wars era stories, but it's doing so in such a way that most of the time, it feels more like the films than the Clone Wars era comics and novels did. So I reached a point a while back where I pretty much said that The way that I've been handling it on the Star Wars Timeline Gold is two timelines. In the Clone Wars supplement, there is a timeline based on the old way. There's a timeline based on the cartoon series. And if someday, as Leland Chi promises, they will somehow be able to work together, more power to them, let's make it happen, fine, whatever. But to be honest, I'm to the point now where if they were to remove all of the previous Clone Wars continuity between episodes 2 and 3, as long as they made sure there were enough retcons in place to allow the things that affect things later to be there, like you would need certain elements, for instance, there about the Mandalorians to be able to work with, say, the Legacy of the Force novels. But if you were to take out that chunk of stories and allow in only the Clone Wars cartoon series and the few retcons necessary to make sure that that removal doesn't wind up affecting other things in a huge ripple effect, I'd be fine with it. Star Wars The Clone Wars is fun to watch most of the time, and I gotta tell you, it's reached that point where it makes me wonder which we should value more as Star Wars fans, continuity or the spirit and the fun of Star Wars. And perhaps it's because I'm older now. Star Wars has been around for years, and I've been a fan since I was a very little kid. Maybe as I've grown up, I started to change my perspective that maybe, just maybe, the fun is more important than the continuity, coming from the continuity guy. So to me, is Clone Wars my Star Wars? Yes. Is the original Star Wars my Star Wars? Yeah. Is the combined version of trying to fit both together my Star Wars? I would hope so, but I don't know how they're ever going to work that together. Leland Chi has a gargantuan task ahead of him, but if he makes it work, then that'll be my Star Wars too. Just give me something that feels like the saga I grew up with.
May I just say this one point? If Leland Chi cannot put it all together, would that be so bad? Really?
Oh, no. I am a strong proponent of the idea that there should be two separate Clone Wars continuities and never the twain shall meet. But he says that's not going to happen, so I hope that he's able to make it work, as opposed to it still feeling sometimes like a train wreck fitting the two together. But no, I'm definitely, from the beginning, I've been a proponent of just tell us which one is which. Tell us that the Clone Wars and the films is one continuity and the other stuff and the rest of the EU is another continuity. Fine. Give us two separate ones. I'm cool with that.
Or have 15 separate ones. I mean, you have Batman, for example, in DC characters. You have Batman, the movie continuity. You have the comic book continuity. You have the TV show continuity. You have the animated show continuities. It's all Batman. But, you know, the Joker here gets shot here, and the Joker here is a boat salesman or whatever. So, I mean, it works. It can work. You know,
well, the thing is, what you've got is that Leland Chi says, and Suhas Stoney and others say, that what makes Star Wars unique amongst sci-fi properties is it doesn't do the constant multiple continuities thing. It has been one solid, supposedly cohesive whole since the beginning, at least for the most part. And that's what separates it from others. I'm right there with you. I'm a big fan of Transformers. I've just gone through and watched all of the Unicron trilogy stuff, which is one continuity. I've read and reread the old Marvel comics, which is another. I'm watching the original series now. I'll be watching Robots in Disguise. It's just all kinds of sci-fi properties have multiple continuities. And while we would accept it, I don't think Lucasfilm will accept it. I think that's the kicker. They've always pushed this brand with the idea that it is one continuity, at least since 1991. And I don't think they're willing to let that go, even if logically it makes a lot more sense to let it go.
Well, here's my answer. Of course not. This is not my Star Wars. How could it be? I love that you guys are so positive and that you're really trying to make this work. And I'm not saying I don't enjoy the Clone Wars and that's not good entertainment, but it's done for a different generation. It's done in a different medium. I know it's visually stimulating, but it's not a feature film. I posted this on the forums. I think one of the things that's fundamentally impossible for it to be the same Star Wars, let's use that term for a second, is that they have this dichotomy in the sense that they have such a short amount of time to tell a story, and yet they've got an incredible amount of content to put out there. They're going to do, let's say, 5 seasons, although Dave Filoni's said at C5 that if it's very successful with great ratings after season 5, then you'll probably get a season 6 and so on. They're not going to, you know, there's not a hard stop to it. But let's say consistently do 22 episodes for 5 seasons, right? That's 110 episodes of Clone Wars. round it up to 20 minutes, you've got, oh, golly, what is that, 2,200 minutes of content? How many hours is that? 30-some-odd, 35 hours worth of content over those seasons? Am I doing my math right? I'm an engineer without a calculator, so I'm not going to claim that math's right. But you understand what I'm saying. That is, wow, that is 17, 16 movies worth of content, which is why I think you get these duds like last week's episode was, like this week's episode kind of was for me. There's an incredible amount of content to put out there, and they can't all be hits, right? But at the same time, any one given outing is only 22 minutes, so they can't do the elaborate storytelling like they did in the movies. You know, I was born in 1975. Of course the original trilogy is my Star Wars. I throw this story out there every so often. I'll never forget it was either late season one or early season two. Spike was playing Empire Strikes Back, and I said, "Hey kids, come down. Star Wars is on." My daughter, who was probably four at the time, she runs down. She says, "Oh, Star Wars." And she looks at the TV and she's like, "What is this?" Okay. It's like, "This isn't Star Wars." I'm like, "Look, Allie, when daddy was your age, this was Star Wars." Okay. I was five when it came out, close enough. So there's definitely a generation gap. Ahsoka is not my Princess Leia of the common era. I mean, no, absolutely not. This isn't my Star Wars. I'm going to watch it because I'm a fan. I love Star Wars. It's intriguing to see what new content comes out. But the answer is absolutely not.
I knew C-3PO. And Jar Jar, you're no C-3PO.
Certainly, I mean, from my perspective, I think it's impossible for to do this. But for me, there is no Star Destroyer going over the screen that just makes you say, wow, like the first moments of New Hope. That's a one-time moment that's gone. I mean, Empire and Jedi couldn't recreate that, right? But there's no help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope type moment. There's no, I am your father. There's no, I love you, I know. There's not even a nyub-nyub, you know, out of Clone Wars that makes me say, wow, that's a gripping moment. And I'm not blaming the show saying that it's bad. It's just that, hey, Star Wars is 30-plus years old now. Those wow moments are in the past just because there's so little to do to really shock you or overwhelm you, either good or bad, I guess. To where for me at my age with what I experienced to look at this and say, wow, this is, I really feel like George is writing this for me. And he's clearly not. I'm not in the demographic for this. I mean, I don't have the information in front of me, but apparently the Clone Wars has been an amazing ratings hit and top rated shows of all time for these, for a cartoon animated series in this demographic or whatever. I don't have the information in front of me. I'll post it on the boards here, but it's doing awesome with its target. And if Clone Wars is somebody's Star Wars, like a like my son or, you know, Barrett, your son or whatever, fine. Hey, good. Continue Star Wars the Next Generation. But anyway, I thought it was an interesting question, especially among, you know, four adults who have a lot of Star Wars experience to draw upon. Nathan, talk to us a little bit about the Clone Wars magazine. I know you got some thoughts on that. Just hit newsstands this past week on the 15th.
Yes, and hasn't hit my mailbox yet, so hopefully it will be soon, I guess. Kind of hopefully. I actually just wanted to offer sort of a word of caution here. The way that this was advertised is not what it actually is. Titan has been, I think it's Titan, has been putting out a Clone Wars magazine in the UK for quite a while. And as part of that magazine, there are original comics produced for the UK that were showing up, just little short comics. And a lot of people in the US have had a chance to read those, whether by getting those magazines and just getting them from overseas, importing them in, or other less reputable means of seeing those particular comics. And then when they started to announce that there was going to be this new Titan Clone Wars magazine in the United States, one of the big questions was, is it going to have comics? And if it does, are they going to be original? Or are they just going to reprint all the stuff from the UK and it won't be new content for those of us who follow the EU pretty heavily. As it turns out, they advertised it as new original stories. Turns out it's reprints from the stuff from the UK. So if you've already read the Clone Wars comics from the UK version of the Clone Wars magazine, you have already read, at least for now, the stories that we see coming in the near future from the Clone Wars American magazine. And for a lot of people out there, that felt like sort of a bait and switch sort of a thing. According to Sue Rostoni, her comment was essentially a, well, you know, they're kind of new for the United States, so it's sort of true. You know, it's kind of a certain point of view type of thing. But for those of us who, like me, subscribed to this series, paid the full subscription price to get new original stories, not reprints from the UK that we've already read, this has been a major, major disappointment. So if you are someone out there considering reading the Clone Wars magazine for its new comic content, its new EU continuity content, be aware that if you have already read the UK stuff, at least for right now, for the foreseeable future, you're not getting anything new with the content for the Clone Wars magazine. You might want to just step back from it and perhaps just pay attention to what stories show up in future issues and just buy them bit by bit as they come out, as opposed to subscribing. Because at this point, if you subscribe from the get-go, yeah, you're going to get the first season worth or whatever it is of magazines, but from a comic standpoint, it looks like we're not getting any actual original new material, just stuff that has never been printed in the U.S. before. But I don't know. I guess to me that feels like false advertising. But then again, I'm the guy who went off on countless rants about the exclusive Hoth level that was never going to be released as downloadable content for the Ultimate Sith Edition of The Force Unleashed when, granted, everybody was saying we should expect it to be DLC. I took LucasArts at their word, and was very, very disappointed. So my feelings on Lucas companies and the veracity of their advertising has taken a major hit in the last couple of years. This is another one of those types of instances. So just know what you're getting into if you plan to subscribe.
Now, Nathan, do you think that'll be an ongoing trend that we're going to see, or do you think that might just been the content we got in this one episode or one issue, but we're going to see a mixture of new stuff and reprint stuff?
My guess would be probably we're not going to see any new stuff. I mean, we may see new stuff eventually, but they've got a backlog of several issues worth of original comics from the UK. And it seems as though, from what I'm hearing of the first few issues, that is what we're going to be getting at least for right now. And given the fact that the Clone Wars one in the UK is still going, you would figure that as they keep building up more and more stories, that's just more and more backlog they can then put into reprints in the US series. I'm not even entirely sure that there's a contractual way that they could do original stories in the US without having it somehow tie into Dark Horse. I want to say that there was something about Star Wars comic production with Dark Horse and everything that explained why only the first round of Star Wars Kids magazines ages ago, which you could either get on newsstands or the ones that came with the Star Wars Missions books, the little packets, the little kind of kids RPG you could get, only the first round of those had original comics in it, and then afterwards there weren't any comics in them once you got to the Episode One era generation of that magazine. I want to say there is something about Star Wars comic production and who can produce Star Wars comics and by what means that may mean that the only thing they can do over here, at least right now, is reprints of the UK. Maybe the UK is the only one that has the outlet for original stuff. It's one of those things it's nagging at the back of my mind as something that I've heard as an explanation before, though I can't place where it is. I guess I'm pulling a Wikipedia right now.
Okay, well, guys, before we wrap up here, let's talk the preview for next week's episode.
I can't wait for Ahsoka to wake up and say, Aura Sing, didn't I see her go boom with the Slave One? I'm looking forward to it because this is what our preview of this season was sort of the visions and the Aura Sing and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's not really a whole lot that we can take out of it beyond what we've seen before and what we talked about, I guess, at the early part of the season about.
I'm looking forward to it. I liked Aura Sing last season. She was a bad Mimma Jimma. So I'm hoping she'll stay that way. I hope they don't kind of tone her down because she was terrifying last season. I loved her. I can't wait to see her next week.
Well, you are filling in for Dan using the term bad mamma jamma.
I think this is going to be, it has the potential of being a turning point for the where the season's going to go, because Aura Sing has not disappointed yet. I mean, when we first saw her with Cad Bane, she was a sniper, and then she's taken over kind of the training of Boba. You know, she's flying Slave One. And, you know, last season, we did see her take a beating. We did see her take a defeat. So it's going to be fun to see her come back. Well, now, not necessarily, see, we don't know if this takes before or after that. So I'm assuming, you know, this is going to take place after what we've already seen in season two. You know, I like Jamie King. You know, I think she does a really good job with the voice. I think she does a really good job as a voice actor. The way she uses her voice. If you want Windu dead, you will do as I say. You know, just like you said, Jen, it's very creepy. She's very creepy. She comes across very powerful. And it has the possibility of being a turning point. And so I'm excited.
Okay, yeah. Hey, I certainly hope that this does get us into the theme of the season a lot quicker than the Rise of the Bounty Hunters thing. So if we start kind of getting serious about the season, for lack of better terms, because I think, you know, unless something pays off down the road, and again, I'll eat my words, but it seems like that these first six episodes were just the warm-up. These six episodes don't really matter, but weren't they kind of fun? Now let's really get into what the season's all about. If that's the case, hey, I'll be ecstatic. That'd be cool. But right now, I'm just going to wait and see. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me this week. We will be back next week for episode 7, Assassins. So long, everybody.
Have a good night.
Have a good night.
See ya.
All right. Now, before we wrap up this week's episode, here is a voicemail from Glenn. Take it away, Glenn.
This is Glenn, and I am calling about the Clone Wars episode, The Academy. My first thought about watching this, I really enjoyed watching it, but on retrospect, there are lots of little things that didn't exactly work for me. I did like this episode. I enjoyed watching it, but little nitpicky things. One sort of not associated thing, and I was sort of wondering, what was Anakin doing in the war while Ahsoka was on Mandalore? You know, he wasn't really... You know, the way it was shown, I think it was shown, he's only barely, you know, he was barely gone. You know, he had to go off somewhere else to fight, and then he was back to pick her up. Hoping maybe, you know, Ahsoka stayed for several days after the event, and it was a week or something, and then maybe in the future they'll show us that. But I'm just a little bit curious here. You have an episode, you only have 22 minutes for the episode, so it's hard to make it really take place over a great larger number of days. You really only can make it take place over 2 days or 3 days. Going back into the show, though, the one thing, you know, if you're in a group and you have, like, some incriminating evidence, and if somebody tells you, oh, bring all the evidence and all the people who know about it, that's a trap. And I sort of get that the Academy students aren't wise enough to pick that out, but, you know, it seems like bring everybody who knows all the information that anyone could possibly know about, and we'll make you disappear. I mean, that's all that's going on there. You gotta notice that. But, you know, kids don't. Nathan sort of brought this up talking about the previous episode about Ahsoka's fighting skills. But the thing that he sort of fails to mention is she's fighting and knocking out people who have armor on and not seeming to, that doesn't seem to be slow down her ability to just hit people. Later in the episode, the second fight, you know, the final sort of battle, you know, she's using the force and throwing somebody, which, was all nice, you know, the first time. Oh, that's really cool. But she barely could levitate Shuchi in the last, you know, two episodes ago, and now she's picking somebody up and throwing them. You know, that's a bit of a stretch. We've never seen, I don't think we've seen a Jedi do that. We've seen some of the Master Jedi go push, do the force push, but we haven't really seen them pick somebody up and throw them before. So that was a little bit questionable in my regard. The thing, you know, with fighting as a Jedi, I think the reason that a Jedi is good at a fight that they can sort of sense what's coming and they can block and counterattack very well. And that's not what we really saw at all in the fight there. The other thing that sort of bothered me is sort of cringe when somebody referred to her as a Jedi Knight and she just sort of like took it and said thank you and went off. When we know she's a Padawan, she still has her braid, and it would have been just as easy for the person to have called her a Jedi and not called her a Jedi Knight or a Jedi Master or a Jedi Padawan, just call her a Jedi. Same meaning of having that person on the planet would have worked. So they called her Jedi Knight, and that bothered me. And then a little bit sort of before that, sort of gone out of order here, as the whole thing prison cell they put that scene in was, I thought it was really cool design, sort of where you sort of raised level platform. I don't know if it's sort of a display that you can sort of see or not see, or I don't know what the design is, but it seems, obviously it seems very difficult for the person to escape from that cell, perhaps. But it took like a half a second to put in an entry code or something to get her out, so out of that. So I was like, you know, you think you would have to have like two people or something more complex to open it. Otherwise, it's just a waste, I think, of an interesting holding cell. So going on, my thoughts for next week's episode, since my Aura Sing premium format figure came this week, I'm kind of very excited to see Aura Sing again, Dami King back. So this way we're sort of clarifying she certainly didn't die. One thing that I complained about during season one was that Padme was sort of traveling around, you know, with very little protection, considering that, there's a hit out on her. You know, they had a new gun ray, we know the new gun ray hired, you know, went to Dooku, Dooku hired Django, who hired Sam Wessel, the killer. That desire to kill her didn't go away. We still wanted to kill her. And I'm glad they're sort of finally following up with something somebody else after he's already killed Padme. I really, you know, want to see Padme kill me. You know, it doesn't happen. But look forward to listening to it. Bye, guys.
All right, Glenn, thanks for those comments. Sounds like we're all on the same page on this episode. Well, anyway, folks, thanks for joining us this week. Be sure to catch us next week as we go over Episode 7, Assassin. And don't forget to check out BackstageToys.com for all the latest new releases in Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, Transformers, G.I. Joe, and heck, even Zuzu Pets. So be sure to check them out. And don't forget, all eligible orders over $25 can get you free shipping. So thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Ingonza Media Incorporated, copyright 2010, all rights reserved.
The timeline is now 13 as of today.
Mm-hmm. So you started that at 18.
I started that sometime. It was around the time I was starting senior year of high school.
Wow. I was starting fires at 18.
Given the fact that she eventually winds up in her capacity as bait, or whatever you want to call it, getting them into the prison, I believe we finally have the in-continuity explanation for her outfit, because in this episode she really was jailbait.
I would have loved to see her come up behind Almec and thrust her lightsaber in his back like Anakin did. Gah! That's two Mandalores down like that. You know, it would have been a nice callback for when Anakin did that. That's going to get edited out, isn't it?
Or let's say, you know, these aren't the droids you're looking for. And the person repeats back, these aren't the bodies I'm looking for. Wait, I said droids, not bodies. I mean droids. You know, something like that. They don't quite get it right.